Welcome to the Do Good to Lead Well podcast. If you're passionate about mastering self-leadership, then you're in the right place. I have always been curious about and fascinated by the pursuit of leadership excellence. This is why I pursued my PhD in psychology with a specialization in business, and I've continued to dedicate my career to understanding the science and practice of positive leadership. My name is Craig Dowden. I'm a best-selling author, award-winning keynote speaker, executive coach, and member of the Forbes Coaches Council. Each week, I'll bring you world-class content on the science and practice of positive leadership. Through my conversations with best-selling authors, TED speakers, and top CEOs, you'll be able to leverage their insights and experience so you can maximize your potential and be the leader the world needs you to be.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Do Good to Lead Well Through Crisis VIP webinar series. My name is Craig Dowden, and really appreciate that you took the time to be with us this afternoon. I'm really thrilled to have Scott Tessier here. He's the CEO of the Canada, Newfoundland, and Labrador Offshore Petroleum Board, and he's been in that role since 2012, so coming up on the 10-year anniversary. Before joining the CNL OPB, he was an advisor to the petroleum industry on legislative and regulatory matters in Alberta. And prior to that, he served in senior positions with several government departments, including Fisheries and Oceans Canada, Health Canada. And earlier in his career, he was a part of the Canadian Council of Ministers of the Environment. And in his capacity as CEO of the CNL OPB, he is an observer on the board of One Ocean. He's also served two terms on the board of directors of the Marine Environmental Observation, Prediction, and Response Network from 2014 to 2020. So without further ado, and I could go on, thrilled to have Scott with us this afternoon. And I guess it's a little darker there being in Newfoundland, and everyone, people know I'm from Newfoundland originally, so this is a special treat for me.
Hi, Craig. Yeah, it's a gray, foggy day here in St. John's.
Makes me, again, feel like home. So that's fantastic. As I said, I'm really looking forward to having this discussion with you this afternoon, Scott. And you have a role around being CEO and also being active in the regulatory space. And just for those of us who have joined us, please feel free to answer your questions. Scott has kindly offered to answer any of your questions. So you have a wonderful opportunity to speak with a leading CEO in our country. So Scott, it's gone on a very long time in terms of the pandemic and what has happened. I'm curious, considering your role, what are some of the lessons that you've taken out of this experience? And in particular, are there unique challenges being in a regulatory environment? Is it similar? I'd love to get your take on that.
Yeah. So by way of background, I had a little bit of a head start compared to others as we got into the pandemic in March of 2020. Because in a past life, I spent some time at Health Canada, and I was there during H1N1. So the storm clouds were forming with respect to COVID-19. I don't think anybody realized early on just how dire and drastic the crisis would be. But I did have a bit of a flavor and a feel for pandemics. So that was helpful, recognizing that nobody in the world had a playbook for COVID-19. In the early days, so in March of 2020, you know, there was a real question as to what sort of additional risk was being introduced into our offshore, whether or not drilling and production could continue, and if they could, should they continue? And, you know, through a lot of careful work within my organization and with the people we regulate and with governments and with public health officials, ultimately it was determined that those activities were important enough to the economy at a time when healthcare was under siege and other sectors of the economy were contracting, that drilling and production should continue. So I think the main lesson learned in how that came to pass was to keep the main thing the main thing. So everybody within our organization, the operators, the supply and service community, public health, maintained an absolute laser focus on offshore safety, on ensuring that the virus wasn't transmitted onto offshore facilities. And a lot of extraordinary work, extraordinary communication was undertaken to make sure that things could continue safely. So an absolute focus on the number one priority of our organization at all times, which is the safety of offshore workers. So we really retrenched around the fundamentals of offshore safety very early on. And that was the most important lesson, to keep the main thing the main thing. And in that case, it was offshore safety.
And already I've got a question. So this is awesome. This is why I love this. Heather loves that you said, keep the main thing the main thing. I would imagine it's easy to get distracted. Like, how do you keep that focus? It's a beautiful statement. Because it just seems like there's so many things digging at our attention. So any insights around how to do that? That's amazing advice.
The most important thing was strict adherence to the public health advice. So another sort of core tenet of regulation, listen to the experts, defer to the experts. And the public health experts in Newfoundland and Labrador very early on took very strong measures to manage and contain the pandemic, to keep it from our shores to the degree possible. And to their credit, the people we regulate followed that advice, followed that guidance, followed that direction, and in many cases exceeded it. And it was absolutely critical in ensuring that their everyday business could continue.
That's awesome. Well, and I'm curious as well. I mean, you talked about that communication and how important it is to communicate. And then, you know, we're in this environment where remote communication, and then you're dealing with a whole bunch of different stakeholders, as you mentioned. So what are some of the keys around how to communicate effectively? Because as you're talking about, these are fundamental and very powerful issues and important issues that you're navigating through. So how can we do that to the best of our ability?
Transparency, honesty, and vulnerability. We have a regulator-regulatee relationship. Everybody always likes to have the answers on our side and on their side. Nobody likes to say, I don't know, or we'll have to get back to you. And because of the rapidly evolving and dynamic nature of, especially in the early days of the pandemic, and you know, it continues today, there were simply times when we would be in collective discussions with the people we regulate, and nobody knew the answer. Nobody knew what the exact level of risk was. Nobody knew what the correct mitigating measure was. And there were times we had to park things, admit that we didn't know the answer, and to their credit, they did the same. Go back and seek public health advice. Is this okay? Should we have this measure in place? And so very careful, very honest, very open communication and a absolutely unprecedented spirit of collaboration amongst the companies we regulate. I mean, they're all in the same industry, but they're competitors, and an incredible degree of collaboration amongst what we call the operators, the oil and gas companies, and sharing information. Here's what we're doing. Have you tried this? Did you think of that? And we saw that to an unprecedented degree in the early days of COVID, and it continues today.
That's amazing. Have another question from a Scott. Another, like, nice to see a Scott on the program. So love that you commented about vulnerability and expressed their own hesitation as a senior leader in their company. I hear it's important, and I'm like, what about, were you afraid people would lose confidence? Like, can you help me on my vulnerability journey? I think it's a great question, one that I get asked. So I'd love to get your insights on this, Scott.
Yeah. In our business, in my business, you know, it's all about the proper identification and proper mitigation of risk. And the pandemic added an element of risk that was really unknown, especially in the early days. And so it was kind of a safe space and the ability for people to say, look, we don't exactly know what the added inherent risk is. So let's defer to the public health experts, first of all. And let's make sure that we follow that direction and advice to a T. And sometimes that direction and advice was unfolding. So in a case like that, it was acceptable not to know. And it was acceptable not to say, I don't know. It wasn't something that the industry had been dealing with for 30 years, but we would expect there to be subject matter experts and technical experts. This was something we were all dealing with for the first time. And that created a very safe environment to admit that vulnerability.
Well, and it's such, I love that you talk about creating that environment where it's safe, right? And that's a really key, something you hear about time and time again about that importance of psychological safety and how to drive that. I was wondering, you know, one of the questions that come up constantly is like, what are the qualities do you think that leaders need to possess to successfully navigate a crisis? And then also, are they different than what we normally, you know, kind of leadership under quote unquote normal times, or are they a unique subset?
I think it's important to lean on your fundamentals. sticking to sort of the core tenets and the core part of our mandate, offshore safety and environmental protection at a time of crisis, nothing else matters, essentially. Those things are always our top priority. In a time of crisis, they're essentially the only priorities for our organization. I think visibility really matters. And my case was sort of threefold. It was within my own organization, you know, bringing people along. We were working remote, kind of lost the connective tissue through remote work, which everybody's experienced. So being visible within my own organization and explaining to people what was going on and what we didn't know along the same theme of vulnerability. And then because of the nature of our organization, you know, we operate in the strange corner of the government. We're a public organization. We regulate in the public interest, but we're arm's length from the government. Government public health officials were doing their thing and pumping out information. It was important for us as the regulator to be visible to ensure that, you know, the local public and the national public understood why it was okay for drilling and production to continue, why those were economically important activities. And that was done through, you know, a lot of phone calls and a few media appearances. At one point, it was something as simple as setting up my iPhone on my table at home, and we recorded a very fly-by-the-seat-of-our-pants message that we pushed out on Twitter, and it got remarkably positive reviews. Just, you know, good to hear you're there, reassuring for people, and visibility and presence really mattered. And I think that's a key lesson in leadership and in crisis management.
No, absolutely. And I think that I love your example of setting up the iPhone, you know, kind of at home studio, and the powerful takeaway being, because without that message, without that information, if people can come up with a whole bunch of other stuff or a lot of questions they're wondering about. I think it's awesome for all of us to remember and recognize, well, sharing things, letting people know, sharing our perspective, it's less about the glamour of the studio in which it's occurring. And it's more about, well, taking the time to connect and let people know, build that community. So that's a really great example. What prompted you to do that kind of at home iPhone message? What inspired that idea?
It was really driven by a call from a member of parliament who was wondering what was going on. It was Jack Harris. I don't mind his name. Jack since retired from politics. An opposition member of parliament called me up because he was worried. He was worried about what was happening offshore. He was worried about offshore workers, to his full credit. And he called just to see, you know, similar type thing. Have you thought of this? Have you checked on that? And he was not looking to score political points by any stretch of the imagination. It was a really constructive discussion. And for me, that was sort of the tipping point that, okay, if Jack is worried enough to call me up, it's time to put a broader message out there. Because if he's worried, rest assured the families of offshore workers are worried and the broader community at large.
That's really great. Thanks for sharing that story. Yeah, it's definitely interesting. Emmanuel, we had another question from Emmanuel wondering, from a personal leadership perspective, have you changed in your approach to how you lead the organization as a result of your experience during this time? And what will you carry forward? Is it something that you're going to change as we move through this? Or great question.
Yeah, I think two important ones. One, I'm much faster to seek advice throughout all levels of the organization. So in organizing ourselves for our corporate response to the pandemic and how we were going to work from home, we struck I'll call it a multi-level advisory team. So people at sort of all different places in their careers and throughout the organization. Because one thing that you can rest assured about COVID is it didn't affect any two people the same way. So, you know, having management team views on how things should go with remote work was really important. But we also dove down in the organization and sought out the views of others who are outside the management team. That was really important and really valuable, and they did great work. So that's something, certainly a practice I'll retain. The other one on a more personal level, I can only describe it as putting your own oxygen mask on first. I've always prided myself on my ability to thrive under pressure and chaos, and the pandemic was a different level of all of that. And I quickly realized I'm not exactly wired to work from home, to work remotely. As much of an introvert as I am, I realized I'm much more productive in the office environment. And I came to realize ultimately that was because I wasn't working from home. I was living at work, as the saying goes. Really hard to turn it off. And I'll share with the group. I've taken more annual leave in the 20 months of COVID than I've taken throughout my entire career, just for that purpose, to make sure I can recharge the batteries and keep going. And I can say with certainty, I've never been so productive. And there's a correlation there for sure.
I think that's such a powerful, and thank you for sharing that and being so open about your own journey, Scott. And I think there's so much in that. And what particularly I want to build on is what you just shared at the, right at the end about, I've never been more productive after taking more time for myself. So what do you think? Because I know it's what's really interesting to me when I have these discussions and with the different client organizations, there can be the, well, yeah, but then when are we going to do the work? And you have lived experience. So I'd love to get your take where people just kind of scratch their heads and go, well, that there's no way I'd be more productive. If you don't mind sharing a little bit about, so what enabled that productivity jump? What's happening when we're working more yet less productive?
It's trust in the capacity and the competence of the people around me. So the ability to unplug, to really unplug and trust that everything will be okay. And so that's a full credit to my managing team and the support of my board. I report to a board of directors, essentially. They're very supportive of that kind of approach as well and kind of insistent that we all looked after each other from that perspective.
Well, and I think you also raise a really important point around, well, how we let go and creates opportunities for others around us to support, to provide contribution, to grow and take that self-care, I think. And it's great to hear that the board was so supportive as well, because that's a message that percolates down through the organization. Another topic I'd love to get your take on is around, there's a lot of conversation around the importance of empathy, like, you know, empathy in leadership and empathy in relationships. And so I'd love to get your perspective on what role, if any, that plays in the work that you do, both within your organization, as well as the different, you know, stakeholder groups and companies that you interface with. So I'd love to get your take on that.
Yeah, it's one of the most important things, you know, as we've talked over the years with our CEO group. And you've written about is the power of empathy and the importance of going beyond the golden rule. Don't do unto others as you would want done unto you. Treat them as though they want to be treated. I've never been a single mother. You know, there's all sorts, and the pandemic has certainly affected people. As many different people as there are, there's different impacts of the pandemic. So no two situations are alike. Treating everybody as I would want to be treated is absolutely the wrong approach. So a really powerful lesson that I came to embrace and put into practice throughout our response to COVID was showing that empathy and understanding that everybody's not in the same boat. Very true, right? Some of us are in yachts and some of us are in rubber dinghies. So that sort of approach, really valuable and really important. And I think very much appreciated by the people that work in our organization.
No, I think it's so, again, to build on that, it's such a great point around, well, let's ensure that everyone has a different experience. You talked about that at the beginning as well. It doesn't matter where people are or what's going on. They have a lens on things. And then it's incumbent on us to figure it out and connect and learn and not make assumptions about, well, what we think they should be going through and or what we think we would be going through and or what we have gone through. All of those assumptions lead to a lot of challenges. It's really great to see, as you say, and this transcends whatever individual or groups that we're speaking with. I got another question from Tim, who really loved the put your own mask on first. He's adopted that, was curious, having concerns, how do I get my leadership team? So how have you, Scott, been able to get your team behind that, and any tips so that Tim believes it's important and just wants to get that fault cascading down, I guess, in his organization.
One of the great ones, and again, this came out of our CEO cohort that you've organized over the past couple of years, Craig, is to check in however you can. And one of the ones I stole from one of my colleagues in the CEO cohort was just the red, yellow, green check-in. So as part of the management team meeting, in addition to getting the COVID update and the operational update and the offshore update and all the sort of transactional stuff, create the time and space to check in. How you doing today? Are you red or green or yellow? Is anybody, you know, heading in the wrong direction? And just creating sort of the atmosphere and the environment where you can have that kind of discussion drives awareness of it and it drives support for it.
I'm a huge fan of the color-coded check-in for sure. It's, as you say, it's simple, it's straightforward, it's powerful, and it gives us insight. And then whether we drill down a little more to understand why, be it the green or the red or the yellow. It's just, it's out there and it's a part of the conversation above and beyond, as you say, some of the tactical things that, we're navigating and what we're doing. I was also, I mean, during this time, and certainly you're seeing it everywhere within organizations, you're seeing it societally. There's a lot of stress that people are under and managing a lot. So how within that, and people can lash out, say some unfortunate things, right? So how do you keep an environment of respect? How do you ensure that conversations stay constructive? What are some insights around that and lessons learned about managing that, you know, all the different stressors that people are dealing with?
Like, calmness goes a long way. If leadership is expressing severe views or expressing things in a way that's not constructive, that creates an atmosphere that's not necessarily conducive to disclosure of difficult concepts and subjects. So I think projecting that calm demeanor right from the top and right from the get-go is important. It kind of gets back to the ability to unplug from time to time as well. If you feel the pressure building in yourself, take the time to vent it in a constructive way. And that's probably not going to be in the workplace. So, you know, looking after your own sort of emotions, being aware of them, being self-aware, incredibly important. And, you know, it helps if you've got a few trusted people around you who can sort of give you a nudge. That's important as well, because maybe you're not as self-aware as you think you are. And if you have a few trusted people around you who are comfortable saying, you know, maybe you should take the afternoon off or go for a coffee, that's a pretty valuable resource to have around you.
Well, I love what you're saying in terms of the awareness of, okay, my dashboard is blinking and there are some warning signals here. And then taking that proactive step to say, you know what, I got to set aside. So I love that point. And it's interesting you talked about that calmness. It reminds me of Chris Voss, the best-selling author of Never Split the Difference. He has a masterclass around what he calls a tactical empathy, which is a fascinating concept. And one of the terms he uses to describe the calmness, he's like, use your late night DJ voice, where, you know, like, and it's so, it's a very powerful visual around it. And he would say, so this is what this is designed to do, is lower the emotional intensity and kind of even things out. So you bring that sense of calm. And I think different ways that, and I love what you're talking about in terms of, because those emotions impact and influence not just ourselves, with other people. Michael has a question. Really like the self-awareness side, and that you said a lot of people aren't as self-aware as they would think. And he said, I know several. So do you have any advice about how to make sure I'm self-aware, and or are there any suggestions so I can help my colleagues be more self-aware?
I mean, self-awareness, it's tough to teach or instruct. It really comes with confidence, and the ability to be vulnerable comes with confidence. And I think those are a package. In my case, so my authorizing environment is comprised of my board and the government departments through which we report. I've got very comfortable, honest, frank, transparent relationships with the people I report to. And I have zero difficulty admitting vulnerability to them. And it just makes it so much easier for me to be self-aware and to admit that vulnerability when I'm comfortable having that discussion with the people to which I report. So you need, you know, having a good boss, I guess, is really important in creating that safe space for your own self-awareness.
I think that's such a really powerful point, right? About, you know, having that safe space to have that vulnerability. And then so that you can create the discussion and the ask. I love what you were saying earlier too about, hey, you know, Scott, if I start to sound a little off kilter here, or I'm sounding really, pull me aside, let me know. Like, if I'm not having the impact that I'm telling you I want to have, please pull me aside. I'm counting on you for that. That's such a great tip.
Yeah. And I think, you know, I think there's a time to fake it until you make it. I think if you're struggling, that is not the time to fake it until you make it.
Yes. That's a really great insight as well. Strategically, you know, being thoughtful about, so, okay, is this the right time in particular? Hey, if I'm struggling, this isn't a time to pretend that everything is okay. Another question from Tara, who was wondering, just interested in terms of, so how do you, what have you found to be helpful in terms of motivating people and keeping people engaged? Like, there's been a lot of change that's we've gone through, a lot of change that we're going to face. How do you keep yourself motivated and your team?
I'm blessed to have a team of approximately 100 people who are very dedicated to our mission. Because of the sector that we regulate, it comprises a significant portion of the provincial economy at a time when the provincial economy is struggling out here, as many know. So reminding people of the importance of that mission. I also work in an organization that has the scar tissue of past tragedies when it comes to offshore safety. So, you know, the Ocean Ranger was almost 40 years ago. It's still pretty fresh in everyone's memory, as is the Cougar helicopter crash from 2009. So the inherent value of the mission, it's right at the surface of everything that we do. So on the safety side, those are front and center and inescapable. And on the sort of exploration resource management side, the economic importance of the petroleum sector, including as we head into the energy transition and move towards, you know, less carbon and more renewable sources of energy, people are really, pardon the pun, energized by that mission as well.
Right. Well, and I have another question from Samantha, who was wondering, so over the last 18 months, you know, that we've gone through, there's just been so many challenges. And then how do you navigate performance? So one of the questions she's been wondering is like, so performance, well, it's going to be likely impacted by what we're going through. And how do you start to know what good performance looks like and how do you manage it most effectively? And then put in, I realize this is a really hard question.
No, it's a great question. And so I think the first part is keeping the main thing the main thing. I think you sort of teased, you know, that notion of never waste a crisis. I'm not a big fan of that saying as a safety regulator in particular, but I also think it creates a bit of a troublesome expectation from leaders. Nobody should be going around with the mindset of, oh great, here's a crisis. Now is the time to implement that really difficult change we've been holding off on. So I think it's important to refocus your expectations of people and to have those discussions in terms of, well, you know what, we're not going to undertake that project. In our case, again, we undertook an office move not very long after COVID started. And it was a really difficult thing to do. And in hindsight, it did a bit of harm. It really stretched people really thinly at a time when they were struggling with a lot of things. We thought it was the right thing to do and the right time to do it. But if I had it to do over again, I can't necessarily tell you I would do it again. So, you know, again, refocusing on kind of the core deliverables that you expect of your people, making sure that they understand those expectations. In our case, we have many organizations embrace flexibility. And, you know, as a sort of pseudo government organization, we were very structured, very regimented, very 9-to-5. We've out of necessity embraced flexibility for our workforce, more remote work. And I was frankly worried that our productivity would suffer. And I think I've seen just the opposite effect. So it really boils down to making sure that people understand what's expected of them and just sort of holding them accountable for deliverability on those expectations.
Well, and one point I want to go back to, because I've heard this and leaders use, okay, now we're going to do this. And under the auspices of, and I think that's such a really powerful, and linking it back to keeping the main thing, how are we using it? And then how is that going to land in a time of crisis about, well, what our motivations are and not just the short term, the long-term implications. So really, really value that for sure. And think it's such an important point for us to consider.
Yeah. With due respect to Winston Churchill, and look, if you can take advantage of a crisis or leverage a crisis to make improvements in your personal life or the quality of your organization, hey, fill your boots, by all means do it. It's when the phrase is wasting a crisis or there's an expectation that you're going to do these transformational things along with managing the crisis. I think that's problematic. I think sometimes it's enough to get through the week, get through the day, get through the month safely and focus on survival. And that should be enough in times like this.
I've got several comments going, thank you, Scott, for saying that. And I think that is such a, as you say, a lot of times that message is missed. And then it sets an expectation too about, oh, well, what are we doing? And if we're not, then there's some, we're lacking in some way. And navigating through this, we've needed all of our reserves and more beside to be able to do that. So then to put that on, to put that added burden on a, hey, let's, we have to come together to figure out what we're going to do and how we're going to move forward. So really, really great message. Tina was wondering as well about, really appreciated your insights on flexibility. Understand you may not be able to share everything. Any observations about how you've approached flexibility or ideas that you can share or key questions that you thought about? So any insight there would be great.
Yeah, we've spent a lot of time on this as a management team, recognizing that there has been a culture change in our organization that needs to be acted upon. So, you know, we were initially very office oriented, very structured, very regimented. I mean, we're regulators. What else would you expect, right? But out of the crisis, you know, all of a sudden we were forced to work remotely. So in February of 2020, the culture was, yeah, if you're working remotely, you're probably slacking off somehow. In March of 2020, you were ordered to work remotely and keep producing. And lo and behold, people delivered. So we've embraced that. We haven't gone full remote work like some organizations have. I mean, there is value in office work for an organization like ours because we've got the broad mandates, the integration, the connective tissue really matter, and some things are really best done in person. At the same time, we're piloting a structured hybrid model where we basically give people an allowance of so many days per month when they can work from home, you know, as long as they work it all out with their supervisor. I suspect we'll never come back from that model. People really like it. The organization has not at all suffered. If anything, it's been beneficial to the staff. And I've heard many pieces of positive feedback that this flexibility has been a godsend for that. And I think it's been good for morale. It's been good for productivity. So why wouldn't we continue on? And the technology has kind of cooperated. As difficult as the office move was, we did a step change in terms of our connectivity. And from a technical perspective. And so all these things like we're doing today, we eventually ironed out all the kinks of the people didn't see you and I trying to connect beforehand, but we've gotten much better at it. We're much more comfortable doing this. You know, I jokingly and not so jokingly said, I will never fly to Ottawa again for a 2-hour meeting. So incredibly powerful in terms of the transformation of our organization and many others, I'm sure.
So much value in what you're sharing, Scott, and in particular, I love that collaborative element of what you're talking about. Okay, there's a certain number of days and here's how this operates. And then you work through and what's really cool. And it goes back to, it links beautifully with your personal example earlier where, hey, I've taken more time off over the past 18 months than I ever had, and I've never been more productive. And then your lived experience, again, managing your, leading your organization is that productivity hasn't stayed at the level. It's actually enhanced. People are happier about it. And you can't imagine going back in a different way. And I think that's such a, you know, really great, it just shows again, that whole notion of flexibility and where we are and what it's about and how we explore. And then simultaneously, it sounds like as well, kind of being thoughtful about, okay, under which conditions do we collaborate and get together? And under which conditions do we operate remotely?
And for us, it's driven a lot of important conversations about tools like email, because I'm a notorious after hours emailer. It's kind of how I conduct my business. And it's not ideal, but the expectations around that. So as a management team and as a staff, we've talked about, you know, if I'm catching up on work on Sunday morning and I'm sending you that email, I don't expect you to answer that email unless there's an operational emergency. But that was never really explicitly stated before. So we're much healthier from that perspective as an organization because people understand, you know what, that's not the expectation. And if anything, it's probably not a positive sign if we're conducting ourselves that way.
Well, and thank you for sharing that example because one of the things that has come out is that, okay, now that we're in this environment, okay, now we're starting to talk about our email habits, as you're saying. So because we're, you know, once we became dispersed geographically for a lot physically right now, it's like, all right, now, so what does all of this stuff mean? And now, and I love that you're sharing that personal example of, so when I, you know, you email me and now I know, oh, Scott doesn't need,
Yep, you're raising such an important point, because I see this in the work that I do on a regular basis, where when that's not discussed and someone sends a note at 6 o'clock on a Sunday morning, evening, Saturday afternoon, well, right away it's, oh, well, am I expected to reply?
Yeah. Meeting conduct, another one, you know, as awkward as the virtual meetings can be, I think some of the constraints around, you know, what's a reasonable time length for a meeting, and do you really need to have the meeting? Again, all sort of positive things that we've learned the hard way over the past 20 months that we'll continue to implement here in our organization.
Yeah, I think that's, again, with meetings as well, I think there's such a, and what I love and what I'm hearing from your experience and what's happening within CNLOBB is that we are having these discussions and that we're having conversations. I think that's so, and to your point at the beginning, no one has a playbook around how to do this, and we all have our preferences and ideas. And then just to have an open dialogue, all right, well, let's just figure out now, what is that going to look like? What is that all about? So love this, love these ideas, and really tangible. So for people watching today, like really tangible tips and techniques and with powerful benefits attached. So another question I'm curious about is that I've asked people is that what's a big lesson you personally learned about yourself going through this pandemic? And I'd love to get your take around, you know, what's a big lesson you've learned about the CNLOBB? I mean, you've been there coming up on 10 years. So I'd love to get, what lesson did you learn about you and what lesson did you learn about your organization?
I mean, the connection between my own productivity and my days off, my entire career, I've never taken as much leave as I've taken over the past 20 months, as I've mentioned, because, you know, whether it was an inflated sense of self-importance or I haven't quite diagnosed the root cause yet, but that was remarkably powerful for me. And that translates into all sorts of important things about family and work-life balance and what really matters. And, you know, once you start down that journey, the results are immediate and remarkable. It's not just productivity in your professional life, it's productivity in your personal life as well. So that is by far and away the top message or lesson from a personal point of view for the organization. And I knew it, but we tested it and proved that we have a remarkably deep bench, leaned on people. And just because of the nature of the pandemic, people were left sort of to their own devices, literally and figuratively, to deliver. And people really stepped up. And it wasn't surprising, but again, you know, the ability and the opportunity to give people the chance to deliver. And I was never disappointed. Whenever we gave people opportunities, I can say without fail, they delivered. That was very affirming. And it probably feeds back to my comfort level in sort of unplugging from time to time. The place is in good hands, to be hands-on on every single transaction, and life will continue. People are very capable. And the depth of and the breadth of the bench strength here was not a surprise, but it's very comforting.
Well, I got another question from Allison, who was wondering and liked the use of the term bench strength. So they're wondering within their organization, you know, how to grow their bench strength. So do you have any advice around how to prepare, get ready that next, you know, that next level of leaders within your company? How can we do this?
Yeah, the most important technique, trick, tip, when it comes to developing bench strength, innovation, organizational growth, is giving people the ability to fail. You know, everything is not going to go perfect all the time. Somebody doing something for the first time might not do it as well as someone doing it the 30th time. So on one hand, failure is acceptable sometimes, provided you diagnose it, learn from it, and act on it. The second part of it is people probably won't fail as often as you think they will. Give them a chance. Again, the bench strength and the depth in our organization, there's very capable people who, given the opportunity to demonstrate those competencies, will deliver.
That's amazing. Well, I got lots of positive feedback on that answer. And in particular, you know, like failure is an option. And to your point, though, learning from it, that's essential. And I love the acronym for fail, you know, first attempt in learning. So when we're learning stuff, I love how you link that. The innovation. Well, how do we innovate if we're not going to do something different? Well, when we do something different, we're probably not going to do it perfectly. Create that culture.
Yeah. And so it, for us and inherently for us culturally, it's difficult because we're a safety regulator first and foremost. So failure in offshore safety, not acceptable.
Right.
So, you know, you gotta recognize what sort of risks are acceptable and put the measures in place to mitigate the wrong kind of risks. But you don't have to apply that one size fits all approach to organizational risk.
Now, how cool is that? It's because that is so, again, it's so contextually driven in that is, okay, so what, I love the questions you're asking, right? What risks are acceptable? What risks are unacceptable? And then what do we need to put in to guard against? And to me, which really is powerful around, all right, now am I, because you can use, as they say, right, that whole, if all you've got is a hammer, everything looks like a, so I'm just going to keep doing this. So what enabled you to recognize or move the organite from, because I would imagine there was just a natural, you know, affinity toward, well, this is what we do and this is how we are. So how do you ensure that we adopt, you know, we're sensitive to contextual deployment?
Yeah, we're very much creatures of habit. And CNLOBV has existed for it since 1985. And this is how it's been done. And, you know, primarily or predominantly with success. Do you really want to deviate from that recipe? Fair points. And again, when you're dealing with offshore safety, being risk averse as a regulator is absolutely the right approach. But regulation in general is moving towards more risk-based, performance-based regulation. Let's less prescriptive, less checklists, and more auditing of management systems and that sort of thing. So the art and craft of regulation has moved in that direction anyway. Our external environment, our authorizing environment has moved in that direction anyway. So there is a much healthier discussion of what risk is, and it's okay to accept some risk. A few years back when I first joined this organization, I had the opportunity to do a week-long course at Harvard University taught by a guy named Malcolm Sparrow. And it was all these sort of technical elements of risk and performance-based regulation and risk-based regulation. And Dr. Sparrow summed it all up. The very last thing he said to us is, if you're going to be a risk-based regulator, be careful. And I thought that was brilliant. So, you know, sort of don't do it blindly. And put all the sort of checks and balances in place to identify what risks are acceptable and what the potential bad outcomes are.
That's amazing. Well, thank you. I have another question, and we're nearing the end. The hour has flown by, so thanks again. So if you have questions, got about 10 minutes left. So I have another question from Steve, who is wondering, you know, as an aspiring CEO, what advice do you have? How do you best position yourself for that kind of path? So Scott, over to you.
So a couple of great pieces of advice. I took over my career from people who mentored me. One was, you know, as you're agonizing over all these different things, sometimes you just sort of got to make a decision and follow through. You can overthink things, especially early in your career. What's my best career path? And a second really great piece of advice I got, because I spent a lot of years in Ottawa working for the Federal Public Service. And I don't know if it's still this way, but in those days, there was a path to leadership and to management. And so you had to do a stint at a central agency and a stint at a line department and a stint in the region. You know, if you really wanted to advance up the food chain in the public service, you had to tick those boxes. And I remember speaking to my assistant deputy minister of the day, Lisa Edporand, who was one of my great mentors. And she said, you know what? Don't worry so much about ticking those boxes. Do a good job and they'll come and get you. And that was brilliant advice. And I guess the third thing that's worked for me, and I suspect will work for others, is don't be afraid to take the risk. I left Newfoundland in the 90s to move to the mainland. I left a comfortable job on the mainland to go work on a contract in Ottawa. I left the public service to go work as a political staffer. I left government to work in the private sector. I mean, all these things that on the surface were really bad decisions, but they were risks that I took and I had the confidence in myself and they came and found me.
Well, that's amazing. Thank you. You've got lots of positive feedback on that answer, Scott. So really appreciate your insights on that. So as we're closing the conversation, is there a piece of advice that you have for leaders as we continue through where we are today and looking into, you know, the next phase, the quote unquote new normal, as they say, like, what advice do you have for other leaders and other organizations? What do you hope for to see across the broader landscape in terms of leadership and how organizations manage themselves through this time?
I think more than ever, I think it's always been true, but more than ever today, how you do it is as or more important than what you do. So, you know, the practices you preach around positive leadership, integrity, consistency, transparency, communication, those are universal. And I think you can do a fantastic job and deliver a product or build a widget or lead a regulator. If you don't do it in a way that matches all of those principles, you're going to struggle. If you don't carry yourself with integrity, if you don't lead positively, if you don't communicate clearly, you're going to struggle. I think that is first and foremost for me. It's how you do it is as important, sometimes more so than what you do. I had a great, just wanted to squeeze this in, talking about my iPhone video during COVID. Someone came up to me the other day and referred to that video. I can't remember the context, or it was kind of out of the blue. That video, I kind of forgot about that. And she said, I don't even remember what you said, but you sounded really calm and assuring. So that's, you know, communication matters. Leadership matters.
Absolutely.
Positivity matters.
Such a great point. And I love, and you're absolutely right, because now you see it happening in every facet, every phase. It's the integrity. I really appreciate using those words, you know, that word integrity, doing the right thing, approaching relationships with an empathetic lens in a human way. And that is front and center in terms of where we are, both professionally as well as personally, and what's required as we continue to move through. And I think just wonderful things for us to think about. This has been awesome. Thank you, Scott. I knew it would be an enjoyable conversation. You live the principles that you talk about. So it's always a joy to chat with you. And I love as well, which I had anticipated, to be great nuggets for people to go and put into practice. So lots of great tips and tools and techniques there, and questions to ask ourselves in terms of, even as we're thinking through our own strategies about how we want to approach different situations. So we've got a couple of minutes remaining. So any final thoughts you want to share with people before we close off?
Yeah, one we didn't talk a lot about is authenticity. And I got a great piece of advice I've received over my career. When I first came back to Newfoundland for this position, one of our board members, a fellow named Reg Anstey, and Reg is a former fisheries union activist, very prominent in the fishing industry. And he was on our board at the time. And the first piece of advice he gave me, he says, Scott, you got to tell the same story on every wharf. And I thought, yes, man, that was wonderful advice as well. So that gets back to the integrity piece of it.
That's amazing. That's awesome that we've closed on authentic leadership. That's something I'm talking about in my next book. So I'm really excited, because that's so important. Now maybe I can go back and include, I tell the same story on every wharf. Well, thank you so much, Scott, for taking the time this afternoon. This has just been an absolutely rich conversation and dialogue, and really appreciate you sharing your insights. Thank you to everybody who attended today. Stay tuned. But to borrow Scott's, you know, very important observation, putting on our own mask first, ensuring that we embrace self-care and encourage it in the people we care about most. And not only is it good for us, we're going to be far more productive, innovative, and happier than we've ever been. Great to see you, Scott. Thanks again, and look forward to seeing everyone soon. Bye for now.
Thanks, Craig. Take care.
Thank you so much for joining me here today on Do Good to Lead Well. If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe and leave a review. If you'd like to continue the conversation, you can follow me on Twitter at Craig Dowden, or reach out via LinkedIn or email info@craigdowden.com. I look forward to meeting you here next week for another transformational episode.